100 years ago this December, for 12 seconds above the dunes of Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, Orville and Wilbur Wright gave wings to the dream that man could fly. They could not have imagined that a century later, tens of thousands of people a day would squeeze into impossibly snug seats and fly for hours across continents and oceans. Or, for that matter, that ultralight airplane enthusiasts would similarly squeeze into impossibly snug seats to meander through the skies. Hal Cannon of the Western Folklife Center captured the mystery of flight with one ultralight pilot on her latest journey.
When Artie Trost lands at an airfield, it only takes a few minutes before local pilots begin to congregate.
Where'd you guys come from?
Oregon.
You flew down from Oregon?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
This woman is a ball of fire, and her plane has matching flair, judging by the paint job on its nose.
It's scarlet, and it's got flames on it that are outlined in teal and golden peach, and then with some lavender flames as well.
Artie flies an open cockpit plane, so minimal birds don't even duck. Her flying partner Randy Simpson's ultralight has a little more protection from the elements, but not much. They have just landed at Cameron Air Park south of Sacramento to refuel. This is an odd combination of airport and neighborhood. The streets and garages are all designed for airplanes. These two started out 4 days ago near Portland and are wending their way through Central California. It may not sound that far, but it's an odyssey at 55 miles an hour in a plane that carries enough gas for about an hour and a half flying.
I love this plane. It's an old model. It was first built in, I think, the early 80s. But what I love is you're sitting completely out in front of the wing. I mean, it's like there's nothing between you and the air.
Artie's plane is a 19-foot red and yellow wing broomstick. At the front tip is a tiny instrument pod with a well-cushioned seat and modified pedals.
I'm 4'11", and so even with the seat as far forward as it can go, I can't reach the regular rudder pedals.
Everything is bolted to the spine of the plane or the boom tube, including the fabric-covered wings and tail. But everything else is in the open, a plastic gas tank, a small engine attached to a propeller. It's one of those that pushes the plane along from behind the wing. Then there's her personal stuff, camping gear, a couple of Rubbermaid containers, filled with everything needed for the next 2 weeks.
I've got straps holding this in, straps holding this in, and then I've also got a bungee cord. I'm known as being pretty compulsive when I go on these long trips about not forgetting. What I do is I have these long lists to make sure that I have packed everything, and then I put them on cards so I know what's packed where.
Where are the M&Ms?
The M&Ms would be on the right side, right here. So I go in here, and there's my raisins, and here's my M&Ms.
Well, shall we?
Artie dons a flight suit, fastens her seat harness, and slips on several garter-like rubber bands, under which she straps a portable GPS to one leg and an air map to the other.
Clear prop.
Ultralights are the mavericks of the sky. They fly under the radar of strict FAA regulations with no formal licenses. Minimal rules have made this grassroots technology one of the most innovative segments of aviation. After all, it's tantalizing to design planes that are supposed to weigh under 254 pounds, carry only 5 gallons of gas, and still get you up in the air safely.
Air traffic, two ultralights preparing to take off runway 25.
On the ground, these planes are gawky and loud, but once they taxi down the runway and edge away from Earth, they become two buzzing dragonflies floating over cattails in a marsh. It's almost like a slow-motion dance out of some fairy tale.
Randy, are you up?
Yeah, I'm up to that.
I see you now. I got you in sight. I see you following the shoreline. I'm going to go straight north and get over some of these fields. I'll keep you in sight, though. Boy, this is really nice flying. nice calm air.
I never dreamed I would be capable of doing this sort of thing. I was raised as a girl in the late 40s and the 50s. And back then, girls didn't do stuff like this. And I remember I really loved to hang around the local gas station because I was fascinated by the work they were doing in engines. And I remember when I was like 9 or 10, my mom saying to me, girls don't do that. And she wouldn't let me go back to the gas station. So for me, a lot of it is, God, I can do this. I can be up here all by myself, totally dependent on myself. It is absolutely the most liberating thing I've ever done because there is absolutely no one else out there to help you.
Luckily, as I look down the river canyon, I see a number of places that we can land if we have engine problems. There is a sandbar. There's also on the shore what looks like a dirt road that's pretty short, but it might be possible to land there if necessary.
Yeah, that spot is definitely landable.
The safety thing is if your engine dies, and actually they say when your engine dies, you should always have a glide path to where you can dead stick into somewhere. I had an engine out over really inhospitable territory last fall, and I never want to do that again.
As I look out, I see straight ahead of me a bank of clouds. It's not a heavy fog, you can see through it, but we don't want to fly through clouds. Randy? I'm going to drop down and head more to the south in the direction that we need to go.
Hail is awful. We were on one flight and ran into hail, and it was so physically painful for me that I literally, it happened that Randy was flying below me and to my left, and I could see him, and I literally put my hand over my face to protect my face. And I radioed him, and I said, just stay in a straight line because I can't, you know, I can't leave my face unprotected. It was so painful. And I just sort of peeked through my elbow and just kept my eye on him. I don't know what I would have done if he hadn't been visible.
Okay, Artie, do you have me in sight?
Roger that. You're at my 10 o'clock. Okay, the fog's lifting enough that I'm going to start climbing.
I flew through a rainbow once. It was on our flight to the Grand Canyon. And we'd just flown through a rain shower, and then I saw this rainbow up ahead, and I kept getting closer and closer, thinking it was going to disappear. And it didn't. And I looked, and it was all around me. I mean, it was just incredible.
I just flew right past a house that had a massive rose garden, roses of all different colors.
There's a lot of trampolines now. Every other house seems to have a trampoline. And when kids are on trampolines, they go crazy when I fly over because they start bouncing and waving.
Georgetown traffic, ultralight approaching from the west, runway 34, Georgetown.
Nice flight. Really nice flight.
We're now at the Georgetown Airport, high in the Sierra foothills. It's an idyllic place in the woods with its own campground, complete with a pond and bullfrog symphony. It's late now. Just enough daylight for Artie and Randy to set up their tents for the night. Before we part, the last thing Artie asked me to do is post a letter. It looks like a love letter addressed to her husband, Norm. At 59, she says she writes or calls every day, and he's supportive, but still she regrets that he doesn't care to fly. R. Marty is an old-style aviatrix. I almost imagine Amelia Earhart camped out here under her wing, playing her flight-sized harmonica, strapping maps to her legs with rubber bands. This may not be how most of us want to fly, our eye on the clock, just anxious to get there. But oddly enough, in this 100th year of aviation, ultralight flying would probably seem pretty natural to Wilbur and Orville Wright.
Well, you know, right now, I can look up and I can see Folsom Lake off to, you know, the south, and it just looks so blue and the air's so amazingly calm. And I wish I could tell all my friends that they just need to get in the air. But most of them are used to me and they don't pay me any attention.
For NPR News, I'm Hal Cannon in Georgetown, California.
To see photos of Artie Trost and her ultralight airplane, go to npr.org. Hal Cannon's story was produced by Taki Telenidis. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.
Hal Cannon's story on ultralight airplanes was produced with the support of the R. Harold Burton Foundation.